you know you are capable of more. Because you have a burning desire to get the absolute most out of your career and life, to starve your fears, to follow your dreams, and to realize your true potential. And we are going to do that together. This is the Own Your Career, Own Your Life podcast. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to the Own Your Career podcast. I'm your host, Andy Storch, and I'm excited that you are joining me today for another episode to help you up your game and improve your chances of owning your career and achieve more in the world of work. And, you know, most of the episodes I publish on this podcast are solo episodes where I am sharing some of my thoughts about what is going on in the world of work and how you can take more ownership of your career, drawing on my own experiences and goals and things that I'm working on. Kind of haphazard, comes out here and there. I released one recently sharing how to own your career in uncertain times. And if you haven't listened to that, go back and check that episode out, because as we are in, you know, coming to the end of the first quarter of 2024, there's a lot of uncertainty going on in the economy and a lot of people that are very worried about their jobs. And so you want to go check that out. And then to be continued on that, I am publishing today a really great conversation I had with my friend Ahmad Mansour. And originally, Ahmad and I were connected through a mutual friend, Angus Nelson, who is an American friend, fellow expat who lives in Lisbon, Portugal. And Angus is actually, should have him on sometime, because he's living an amazing life in Lisbon. And he is one of the people who inspired me and my family to make a move from the United States over to Europe when I saw that he did it. And I started asking him a million questions, and then we made the move as well. He connected me with Ahmad, who lives in Southern California, but travels extensively around the world, visits Europe, especially Spain and Portugal, quite often. And he happened to be in Barcelona, and he and I had a chance to get lunch and then hang out a couple more times and really get to know each other. And we've just really jiving on a lot of things around career and talent development, similar space that we're in. And Ahmad comes from a really interesting background working in academia as well as consulting in a number of other places, and has some really interesting thoughts on what's going on in the world of work and the world of talent development. And he asked me if I would record an interview with him for his podcast, The Talented Life. And I said, yes, of course. And then I said, why don't we just keep it conversational and I could use it on my podcast as well. And so we recorded a few weeks ago, and for his podcast, I ended up taking the audio and publishing it on my podcast, the other podcast that I have, the Talent Development Think Tank, because we talk so much in this conversation about talent development. And the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. People really enjoyed the episode. And it's really a little bit about talent development, but it's also a lot about career development and owning your career and thinking about where you want to go in your career and your life and what else is going on in the world. So if you're in that position, I hope this is helpful for you. This is a conversation between myself and Ahmad Mansour, who resides in Southern California, but travels all around the world running his own consulting business. And this was originally for his podcast called The Talented Life, which you can check out. It has also been published on my other podcast, The Talent Development Think Tank, which is primarily for talent development professionals. And now here on the Own Your Career show. Enjoy.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to The Talented Life podcast. Today, I would love to introduce you to Andy Storch, who's an author, consultant, coach, speaker, facilitator, and the author of the book, Own Your Career, Own Your Life. Welcome to the Talented Life podcast, Andy. How are you doing?
Ahmad, I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for having me on. We've been chatting quite a bit lately, and it's great to do this conversation with you.
Yeah. Should we share a little bit about our connection?
Yeah, I think that's useful. And I think it's interesting given the work that you're doing and like thinking about how people live and work, because we both are sort of living that modern lifestyle dream. I know you've been traveling a lot in different parts around the world. You go to Portugal a lot. My family and I moved from the US to Spain just 6 months ago, and we were connected by a mutual friend in Lisbon. Shout out to Angus Nelson. And you've been in Barcelona for a bit. So we got a chance to get lunch and hang out a couple times and realize, yeah, we had a lot in common, including our missions of what we're trying to do and help people own their careers and you know, embrace their talent to achieve more of what they want in life.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, knowing that you were going to be in Spain I wanted to connect with you because I read some of your book and I thought that it would be a fantastic opportunity just to connect around what it means to own a career. And so first, I just want to ask you, what prompted you to write the book and what is it about?
Yeah, well, thank you. And, you know, like you, I've worked a few different places, a few different capacities. I got a chance to, I was in the insurance industry for a while, and then I got a chance to work in consulting and really kind of stumbled into this dream job about 15 years ago, going in to work for this consulting company where I got to create and run these business simulations and travel all over the world, working with different global companies, different leaders, teaching things like leadership, strategy, finance, business acumen, and really learned a lot about business and strategy during that time. And I saw what great leadership looks like. And I also observed a lot of people kind of drifting through their careers, you know, operating in reaction mode, waiting for other people to tell them what to do or where to go. And it doesn't mean that they couldn't necessarily be, quote unquote, successful, right? Move up the corporate ladder, get promotions into different roles. But at the same time, a lot of people weren't, and they were sort of like waiting for something to happen for them. And it wasn't. Or even for the people that did move up, I felt like a lot of times the way they were telling their story, it was very unintentional. And they were going to get to a point where they're like, I don't really know how I got here. Or like, you know, I mean, I guess it's been a good run, but if I could have done things differently, would I have? I'm not really sure. And so I'll kind of pack that away. And then back in 2016, I kind of started my own journey of introspection and personal development. I had this kind of introspective, like crucible moment in 2016 where I was kind of floundering around. Like I had a good job and a family, but I felt like something was missing for me. And I realized after I listened to a podcast and I heard an interview with a man named Hal Elrod, who wrote a book called The Miracle Morning. And I knew I had to dive in and get that right away. And that book completely changed my life. I started doing things like meditating and, you know, getting up earlier than I needed to start my day intentionally with things like meditation, reading, writing, affirmations. And I started reading a lot more books, listening to a lot more podcasts. And I really started diving into this world of personal development, personal growth, doing a lot more self-reflection and think about who I was and starting to think about what I really wanted to do in my career. Now, I mentioned that something was missing for me. I realized through that process, the thing that was missing for me was growth. I was, you know, even I had a college degree and a master's degree, but I wasn't doing much more learning on a regular basis. And so I realized like, oh, I need to be learning regularly to like kind of fuel my growth, which fuels my idea of fulfillment. At the same time, I learned what really like lit me up. And I was really gravitating towards this idea of entrepreneurship, which is something I knew nothing about growing up. My parents were teachers, you know, no entrepreneurship in my background, but I really felt pulled towards entrepreneurship. And so I started really going on this mission to figure out like, how can I build a business, you know, based on the things that I like doing that I've, and it was really hard, but I figured all this stuff out. And as I was building that, one day I kind of had this realization like, oh, I have done all this work. I've learned all these things. Like I have these tools now that I could use to help other people in owning their careers. And at the same time, I also realized that, you know, in talking to clients and other people that, hey, entrepreneurship is not for everybody, right? A lot of my clients tell me like, that's cool what you do. I would never want to run my own business, be out there like selling all the time and everything. I'm like, yeah, that's totally cool. I think entrepreneurship's not for everybody. What most people do want is to feel happy and fulfilled in their careers, right? Yeah. Like, you know this, you've worked with so many students and people over the years. And so I've decided to go on a mission since then, you know, I decided I wrote my book on this to help more people take ownership of their careers and build a career that they love.
I think a lot of that is around self-awareness. You know, the idea of becoming an entrepreneur, you know, no one is taught how to become an entrepreneur. You know, it's not something these days, I think students, young people are getting more access to what it means to be an entrepreneur. But for the most part, it's something that you have to have a keen interest in and being willing to experiment and learn about
what are some of the elements
that actually resonate.
You got to try stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of books and stuff. And I took classes in business school on entrepreneurship. Shout out to my favorite professor, David Belasco, who was amazing, but it's still not an academic thing. Like you have to go out and do stuff. There's no other way around it.
Absolutely. But one of the things that you mentioned, and I think this is another area where our lives and our careers parallel. You mentioned how inside of these companies or just in people's careers, you can kind of get into mission creep. you know, where you're inside of a company, you're working, you know, you're doing good work, but you kind of forget, you know, what your sense of purpose and how the ways in which you want to have impact. Something similar happened to me. And it's interesting because you said 2016. For me, it was 2017. Or I guess you could say 16, 17.
Yeah.
I decided that I wanted to take a leap outside of education, higher ed, and leave my job as a dean, a very secure job and a job in which I had had a lot of success in. And I found that I was at a point where I needed to find other ways to have impact on the things that were so important to me, which is really about how can we unleash human potential in this environment where we're having these conversations around the future of work and skills and capabilities and all these different things. Yeah. And so, you know, what you said really resonated with me. And it's also fantastic when you can think about these things like yourself and be of service by writing a book. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And you know, there's something to be said for, like you said, self-reflection, self-awareness, introspection, really getting to know yourself. I see this as like the core tenet and foundation of owning your career is like really spending time getting to know who you are, because that's going to inform what you want to do with your career. And when I say what you'd want to do with your career, it sounds like, oh, you know, for someone 22 coming out of college, but you know, 30, 40, 50, we can be figuring this stuff out and we can still be making pivots like you and I have, me in my 30s and you.
You can say 50s for me.
Yeah, we'll see. You and your, I see some gray in that goatee over there. No, but we can be making these pivots at any time. We have so long to live and work. And, you know, it doesn't have to be when you figure out like, oh, this is the big thing I want to do. It doesn't have to be entrepreneurship. It could be something else. Maybe you want to make a career shift or a pivot. But a lot of people, they start to figure out what that might be, but they don't make the jump because they're so afraid of that risk of what might happen. Like, what happens if I fail? And you took a risk to leave a very secure type of role in academia to go out and chase this dream to do things. Like, what really drove you, and what do you see as kind of the defining factor for people to be able to overcome that fear, to take that chance?
Sure. Well, I think one thing was that it wasn't my first rodeo. I considered that moment to actually be part of another cycle of reinvention. Prior to my dean position, I held many different positions inside of companies. I worked for some of the largest management consulting firms. I worked for research companies. I was even a CEO and a program director of a media arts museum. So I have a range of different types of work that I've done. And I've always transitioned when I saw there was an opportunity to impact people in the community differently. And I think for me, in this stage of reinvention, I was at a point where I had done a lot of work in higher ed related to developing people's careers through educational programs. And I came to a point where, and this actually happened after I built a $50 million building, which over a three-year period just kind of wore me down, and just dealing with a myriad of different things. And we were at a time in the market where the future of work, and you start seeing these changes coming up where CEOs were talking about skills gaps. And so you began to see these boot camps jump out from nowhere. And these boot camps were essentially enterprises that were able to enroll people much quicker and faster than I was able to enroll them at the higher ed level. So I kind of felt like the environment that I was in and some of the pushback I was getting for the type of programs I wanted to create was really slowing me down. So I really needed another avenue to deploy my capabilities. And so when my contract came up, I thought deeply and widely about it. And I was fortunate enough to have a company offer me a contract at a really good, really good rate that really became kind of a jumpstart for me to leave higher ed and really move into this space that I fully did not have all the answers to, but I kind of knew the direction that I wanted to point my career.
Yeah. And you, you had such a strong desire there, such a strong why, and you did it right, leaving with a contract, right? They say if you're going to leave your job to start a business, the best way to do is with a contract in your hand.
Absolutely.
I had a similar situation where I left the full-time job as a consultant I was in to join a smaller organization as an independent consultant. And they kind of gave me a safety net to go like start a business under their umbrella.
Yeah.
It was very, very generous. It was it's something I'm always going to be grateful for, because I saw it as kind of my bridge into entrepreneurship before I went completely out on my own in 2020. What I'm thinking about as you're telling this story is like, you had this drive that you needed to go do something different because you saw the difference you could make in the world and it wasn't working in the current place you were.
Sure.
I had this really, this drive, this pull that like, I want to go do something on my own and build something, even though it was risky. And I had, a kids and a mortgage and that sort of thing. And what I'm thinking about is that when your drive is big enough, it can help you really push you to overcome those challenges and the risk. It's great if you can leave with that contract and ease into it,
yeah,
like we have. But if you have a strong enough drive, a strong enough why, then there's a good chance you're going to overcome the challenges and you're going to make something work, whether it's a career change, applying for a new job, starting a business.
Absolutely.
You know, there's an old saying, I forget who said it, but if you have a strong enough why, you can overcome anyhow, right? And
absolutely.
So it comes back to like connecting your vision and your goals to a purpose, something I'm big on, like knowing why you, if you tell me, hey, Andy, my goal is to leave my job and start this business, or it's, I want to change jobs and get out of finance and go work in HR. And I ask why, you can answer that question. Well, it's because I love working with people. It's because I want to take more chances. I want an opportunity to make a bigger impact.
Absolutely.
Even if I want to make more money, that's fine to support your family. Like there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you're really clear on the reason, why you're doing things.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I think the research really supports this, is that our why is our motivation. One of the biggest challenges inside of any organization when it comes to careers and career path and career journeys is that people lose their sense because they're no longer motivated. And part of it is not being connected to the why that you're referring to. And so I know that in your book, you talk a lot about goal setting and vision, which is really the companion to really answering the question why.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about how goal setting and vision is a way to really move your career and kind of bring a sense of motivation in terms of what you're trying to get done?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, one more thing about that why, that purpose, and you mentioned like working hard and things like that. During the pandemic, I did a series of interviews with people about burnout and working remotely and things that were going on. And one interesting thing that popped up, because we heard a lot about burnout and people working too many hours and all this sort of thing, is that one of the causes for burnout and the mental health issues and just getting overly stressed by work is not just the number of hours, but it's a lack of purpose behind it, right?
Yeah.
Because you hear about people that are working 100 hours a week for a startup, and maybe in the long run, it's not healthy, but if they're really excited about what they're building,
absolutely,
then they're fine. It still gives them energy. But if you're just getting run ragged by a boss who never even explains to you why you're doing things, or like you're just not really that connected to the purpose of the organization you're talking, it's so draining, right? It's awful.
Absolutely.
So coming back to, we laid the foundation for what it means to own your career. And it really is, it starts with a commitment to ownership and responsibility and saying like, okay, maybe I was drifting in the past. Maybe I started this job because my mom, made a connection, or it's the only thing I could get after college. And my first job after college was like the only one I found, right? It wasn't like, oh, it was very strategic. Right? It was like, well, this is the only thing in front of me. I need to make some money, so let me go take this job. There's a myriad of reasons why we have taken jobs in the past and how we got to where we are. And if you've been drifting and it was all accidental, like there's nothing wrong with that. Owning your career is about saying, okay, from this point forward, I'm going to take ownership. I'm going to take responsibility. I'm not going to complain about what other people are doing. I'm going to focus on what I can control and take ownership of my career. Then I'm going to do the work, the self-reflection, to build my self-awareness and really understand who I am, my strengths, my weaknesses, my values, my energizers, the things I care about, my priorities, and then use that to inform what I want to do more of and less of in my career. And then the next step is to start to set a vision for where you want to go in your career. Where do you see yourself in 3 to 5 to 8 to 10 years? what would you like to be doing? And that could be based a lot on your strengths and the things you enjoy doing. What do you kind of fantasize about doing? It might be the same thing you're doing now, by the way. This is not about necessarily changing, right? Some people are in their careers. They're like, I like doing this. I'm pretty good at it. It might mean like some tweaks. You know, I like finance, but maybe I want to spend a little less time in spreadsheets and more time on the financial strategy. It might be a completely different job, or it might be starting a business. Who knows, right? But think about what the things are that you really want to achieve, because yeah, I go to this metaphor a lot. Like, you know, you travel a lot, Ahmad. I travel a decent amount. I think you travel a lot more. When you get on a plane, like, you're 100% certain the pilots in the cockpit know exactly where they're going, right? They have a clear vision in mind and they know how they're going to get there. Crossed. Right. Cross your fingers. They might make some adjustments along the way. But even when you get in your car to drive somewhere, you know where you're going. Like, I think it's rare these days people just go for a quote drive like our grandparents probably did in the 50s or something, right? But like, we know where we're going, and we have a plan to get there, even if that's outsourced to Google Maps or something like that, right? But in our careers, we kind of show up and we're just like, well, I'm gonna work hard and we'll see what happens, like see where it goes. So I think it's really helpful to have a vision, a destination in mind, to know where you want to go. And it just gives us an opportunity, something to fall back on when opportunities come up, when challenges come up, to make it, you know, make decisions easier, because we know, oh, yeah, things are going well in finance, but my vision is actually get into HR, or I want to get into training and development, whatever it is.
Let me jump in here, because I think that what you said is so critical. But when I look at this, I look at it from just the huge spectrum of where people are in their careers. So young people, and I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about this. So young people coming out of college, and I have to address that because I'm a former dean, you know, so I got to speak, I got to speak for the people who are coming out of their, college and into their careers. Young people who are in their 20s, there's some who believe that their 20s should be a time for exploration and, you know, really kind of setting really strong goals and trying to figure out how to meet those goals. Could be somewhat premature, that sometimes you may need to just explore and experiment and kind of run into yourself, versus someone who is in a mid-career who's at a place where they are not motivated and they're not feeling a sense of connection to their career. And whereas rethinking and setting goals, you know, is something that's a little bit more applicable to them. Mm-hmm. Where does this your approach, how does that apply to young people versus, let's say, someone in their mid-career?
Well, I agree. I mean, if you're listening and you're in your 20s, like, congratulations, you got your whole like life ahead of you, right? I think it is absolutely a time for exploration. And the problem is, I personally wasted a lot of that time because I was either out partying or watching sports. I watched so much sports in my 20s. And there's nothing wrong with watching sports. There's nothing wrong with watching Netflix or The Bachelor or whatever it is that you like to watch, right? There's nothing wrong with that. Like, Mod, you and I were chatting before we started recording. You stood up late last night to watch the Super Bowl. We're recording this the morning after the Super Bowl.
Wah, wah, wah. We lost.
Wah, wah. Yeah, we're both in Spain. So the Super Bowl didn't start till after midnight. So I was asleep. You stayed up. Which is a reminder, by the way, that like, we all get to choose how to spend our time for the most part. And there's trade-offs to every decision, right? Like, I missed out on a great game. You missed out on the quality sleep that I got.
I'm dragging right now. Yes.
Exactly. You're feeling it right now. I'm feeling pretty good. It's, you know, afternoon. But there's always trade-offs to how we could be spending our time on all kinds of things. And in our 20s, like, we could be watching sports and partying like I did. We could be spending tons of time reading books and learning and figuring out what we want to do. I don't think there's a right or wrong, but I do think there's a great opportunity for exploration and trying things, for really adopting a growth mindset and saying like, oh, I'm interested in AI right now. I'm going to explore doing everything I can to build that into my career. Or I'm interested in finance. I'm going to explore that and realize that, hey, I might get 2 years in and either love it or hate it. And if I hate it, then I'll pivot and try something else. And I'm still going to be so young, it doesn't matter. Now, when we're in our 40s or 50s, it seems a lot riskier to make a pivot, right? Because we're like, well, I'm so established in this career. But I think we still have time to make changes and do different things. And we can take our experience and our network with us, which is why I talk a lot about the three things you can always be doing to set yourself up for future success. Mm-hmm. So like, the middle part of my book is all about preparing for the future. And those three things are investing in continuous learning, building your network, and building your personal brand. And so no matter what you do, you're always going to take your knowledge with you, your experience with you, your network with you, and even your personal brand with you. And I know it's really hard sometimes if maybe you train to be a lawyer, right? I hear this story quite often, lawyer or doctor, like, well, I don't like what I do anymore. I want to change, but I invested so much time into this, which is total sunk cost fallacy, right? To use academic terms, like, okay, you invested in that, you did that. But if you're not happy, why not try doing something else? And the question is always like, could you come back to it? And the answer is usually yes, right? So I always ask people, like, if they're thinking about a risky move in their career, A, what's the worst thing that could happen? And usually the worst thing is I try this thing, it doesn't work out, and I go back to what I was doing before. And the only downside of that is like, maybe you miss out on a couple of years of experience. More importantly, people are worried about their ego, right? They're like, oh, it's going to be so embarrassing if I come back. Like, who cares? At least you tried something.
Absolutely.
The upside is you might discover a career that you love and go, you know, pursue that for a long time. The other question is, what are you going to regret more later in life, right? Are you going to regret trying and failing, or are you going to regret not taking a chance? And so I consult that, my older self, a lot, looking at those things. I think we often have more time than we think to explore different things. And I think if we work in great organizations, they give us the opportunity to try and explore. So I work with a lot of people in talent development. I know you do as well. Mm-hmm. I think the best organizations are trying to create more talent mobility, even creating so-called talent marketplaces where people can go and find out what types of jobs are available and they can explore different careers. And if they have supportive managers, then they can take on side projects, explore different things, which I think that is the future of where work is going, like
Absolutely.
More gig-based,
Absolutely.
Project-based, and people being able to explore stuff. And when you work for a company that sets that up, it's so beautiful because you can be in your 40s and be like, yeah, I've worked in finance most of my career, but I'm really interested in HR or marketing.
Absolutely.
Can I take on a project? Can I go join a team for a little while and see how it works? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest challenges inside of organizations is that people are into their work, but they see their work as task. And really, in the workplace, you'll be in a better position if you're looking at what type of problem you want to solve. And when I actually speak with managers and executive leaders, I make that clear distinction between the two. As a manager, do you want to give a team a task or a project, or do you want to kind of construct a challenge question?
Yeah.
So they're getting an opportunity to solve something. And what I find is that also with team members, with employees, as individuals, many times they lose themselves inside the company, and they do need some sense of navigation in terms of knowing what they actually bring to the table. So often I see people inside of companies that really don't understand how many skills and capabilities that they have. Even when I'm working inside of higher ed, and this happens a lot, you know, you have these professors, you have some of these brilliant administrators and researchers, but sometimes when you speak to them, they have no idea how their skills can translate outside of the university, outside of a four-year college setting.
I could never go anywhere else because
exactly.
This is all I know. And
this
my
is all I know.
Yeah.
But when you sit down and you start talking to them and kind of breaking down what they can potentially do, first of all, you have to convince them that what you're saying is actually doable. Mm-hmm. But they get excited. And that's the motivation, I think, that is critical. I can give you one story about a student. So I had a nursing program, which is actually the top nursing program in California. And one of our students graduated. I think she was first in her class, and she passed all of her board exams for nursing. But when I had a chance to sit down and speak to her, she was really interested in nutrition. However, through all of her training, she learned about nutrition. She knew about the body. She knew, the anatomy part of the body. But one of the challenges that she had was that the program had essentially trained her to go into hospital settings. So she only saw her career opportunity as a hospital. Mm-hmm. And when I really began to like talk to her about health and I connected her to other people in the health and wellness field, she got really excited, but she had to make a choice. And that choice was she willing to kind of pivot away from the traditional track that she was often told was the route to take versus this other route that she did not have as much information about. She didn't know what that journey would look like. So she started to do informational interviews. And just for me to fast forward this story, today she's actually one of the top wellness experts in her area, because she continued to take that deep dive and she found her passion. She found her motivation. In many ways, that's what gets your navigation system to point in the right direction.
I love that story, and especially that she pursued it. It does seem riskier, but I think things are changing so fast. The pace of change today is faster than it's ever been before, and yet it's slower today than it's going to be in the future. So things are just going to keep getting faster. Jobs are changing all the time. So why not think about going to create a new job based on your skills, like where you think things are going? That's what organizations are thinking about. When I go to these, you know, talent development HR conferences, they're talking about AI and they're talking about skills. They're talking about how do we develop skills of the future, because they see how things are changing so fast. Yep. We can't just keep people in those stagnant roles anymore. We got to think about developing skills or helping them develop new skills that will help us get to where we need to go as an organization. And I think there's a great opportunity for individuals to get ahead of that by saying, well, here's what I'm passionate about. I see this as being valuable in the future. Nutrition is going to become more and more valuable. More and more people are becoming aware of, you know, how nutrition is going to help us prevent disease, not just trying to like cure it, right? But actually prevent. And I've been on my own health journey and done a lot of research on that. And I wish more people were pursuing that. I think we'll see more in the future. And so you're going to have people with opportunities to change and try different things. The other thing I love you mentioned there was the concept of informational interviews. It's one of my favorite tools in the toolbox when it comes to networking, exploring new careers. If you're like, well, I'm in this career today, right? I'm a nurse, or I work in finance or HR or whatever, and I want to make this pivot, or I want to try to move up, or I want to try to start a business, whatever it is, go find the people who have done the thing or are doing the thing that you want to do. Chances are there are many of them. There's a small chance that you're creating a brand new thing that's never been done before, but chances are not. Go find people that have done something similar and then ask them if they'll take some time for 20 minutes for a coffee or a virtual chat just to share their experience. When I was graduating from business school, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I reached out to like 30 alumni and just asked them, hey, I see you work in finance or marketing. I'm really interested in that. Can I take 20 minutes of your time to ask you about your career so I could just learn more? And I had like a 95% acceptance rate. Like there were like two people that didn't give back to me. Exactly. Everyone else was like, yeah, happy. I couldn't believe it. And I did tons of interviews. It was great.
They're open to it. Yeah.
Yeah. People are open to it. If you're not trying to sell them anything, you just want to learn from them. People are open to it and you can learn so much. You build your network. If you impress somebody, it might even actually turn into a job opportunity. Like you just never know until you have that conversation.
Well, it's interesting because when I left my dean position, part of what I was interested in was how that position, I kind of had an idea, but I needed to go and explore it. I wanted to see how that position could translate into the private sector. Mm. And so I began to look at positions as the chief learning officer of any particular enterprise. I thought that was a fair conversion, you know, from one sector to the other. Yeah. And so I went out and I actually met with a couple of people who I knew were CLOs at a couple of tech companies, and one of which was an ed tech company. Went there and I did an informational interview. And when I did that informational interview, I actually did it on a day in which this person was speaking at an unconference. So they invited me along. They said, come along. You could see the culture and see the type of people who show up here. And went there, got a really good meal. And interestingly, it was a way that I was introduced into the ed tech area, an area that I actually work and I do consulting in today. And I found this information interview to be really a jumpstart into a whole different sector that I knew nothing about, or I did not have as much information that I actually do now. And so information interviews are incredible ways, but you also have to do it with a certain degree of earnestness. I think you just mentioned, if you're not going there with the sense that maybe I can get a job or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no expectations,
that you're really going there to actually learn.
Yeah,
people are more than willing to volunteer their time.
As soon as you ask for a job, you're putting someone in such an awkward position.
Right.
You're just asking all you want is to ask some questions about them and learn. If they happen to ask about you, that's great. If they don't, that's fine. You're going with no expectations. Just go in there to learn, make a connection, and maybe it turns into something more.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Who knows, right? But you Absolutely. Just want to learn about that career.
Well, there were a couple of things you said there that's in your book. You mentioned networking. And I think this is a critical one, because when people think of networking, they think it's about going to a particular event.
Yeah.
Your cards and
business cards.
Your 30-second pitch.
Yeah.
To have these type of conversations. And often what I talk about, it's not about networking. I know you talk about building a network.
Yeah.
I kind of see networks as a way to build a community. So I'm really interested in hearing a little bit more about what are you articulating about how one should go by building their network, or why that's critical to owning your career.
Yeah. I mean, look, nothing has been more critical for me in my own career success than having a network, having relationships. Yeah. And, you know, to your point, like I've been big on networking since 2005, I started business school and I read a book called Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi. I don't know if you ever read that book.
Yep.
Yeah, back in the day. It's nearly 20 years old now and it's a little outdated. You know, he talks a lot about his BlackBerry and social media didn't exist yet, right? But the concepts are the same. And I put two chapters on networking in my book because it was so important for me.
Yeah.
The idea is get to know as many people as possible, you know, especially influential people. You never know where it's going to take you. And so I went on a mission to do that since I read that book. And I got to business school and I was at USC and I was like, I'm going to meet as many people as possible. And that ended up resulting in me becoming the president of my class the first year and then president of the MBA program. And I share that because I don't think I was like better or more talented than anybody else. I just knew more people. And at the end of the day, it's like, I don't want to say it's a popularity contest, but people are like, well, I know that guy, I'll vote for him. Right. So it's like easy to get elected when you know everybody.
Absolutely.
And you have been interested in them. So one of the key aspects of networking, one of the key tips that I always tell people that's been really helpful for me is curiosity. Like when I meet people, I like to ask a lot of questions and really get to know them as much as I can. And then if I can, I find a way to help them. You know, you want to try to serve others, help others before you ask for anything in return.
Absolutely.
Those are like the two core tenets of networking that have served me so well. I had this amazing discovery moment as I was doing that. I was meeting all these people and asking them lots of questions. And I'm like, wow, people really like me. And sometimes I don't tell them anything about myself, but they like me because I ask them about them, right?
Sure.
So there's that famous book by Dale Carnegie from the 1930s called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And in that book, he said, everybody's favorite subject is themselves. And it's true. It hasn't changed. You know, we could all be modest and be like, oh no, I don't like all that attention on me, but you still like talking about yourself
Absolutely.
And your job. And you don't get a chance to do it very often. This is why informational interviews work really well, because people don't get to talk about their jobs very often. They come home, their spouse doesn't want to hear about their job. They don't care. They're just talking about the kids, whatever else is going on. Did you take the dog out? Did you take the trash out?
Right.
Like, oh, what happened at work today? I don't care. But you get a chance to really talk about your job. So hopefully some people have spouses who really care about their jobs. I tell my wife some stuff, but I don't think she wants to hear like detailed stuff about how I work. Anyway, so you also mentioned like this concept of networking. People call it different things. Some people hear that word and they're just like tense up. They're like, ah, you know, it's like, I think of networking as like walking into a room, a networking event, and everybody's handing out business cards. There's usually like five realtors there trying to sell you a house. And it doesn't have to be like that, right?
Sure.
I like going to those events, but I like networking really with purpose. And I like to think of networking as building one relationship at a time. And
Absolutely.
That's it. So if you walk into a room at a conference, you don't have to meet everybody. Just pick one or two people, walk up to someone friendly looking like Ahmad and be like, hey, you know, you look pretty friendly. Sometimes you look pretty friendly. I don't really know anybody here. I'm feeling kind of intimidated. And then chances are you're going to be like, yeah, I feel the same way. And it's going to start a conversation. Where are you
Absolutely.
From? Where do you work? What do you do? Why are you here? What do you like about this stuff? And I've just found like building those relationships over time has opened up so many opportunities for me. I mentioned that I got a great break going into consulting 15 years ago. That was because I reached out to a friend thinking I wanted to change careers, and he got me that job. And then I mentioned I got an opportunity to kind of bridge into entrepreneurship with a smaller company that came from a good friend of mine who said, hey, why don't you come partner with me in this company? And then when I went on my own, I had encouragement from so many different people in my network. I've had business opportunities that have come from people in my network. Last year, I did work with a company because a guy went to business school, had been following me on social media and reached out and was like, hey, we haven't talked in 20 years, but I think it'd be cool for us to work together. And because we built a relationship 20 years ago, and then I was building my brand along the way, knew who I was. So it's really just about building relationships one person at a time and getting curious, asking about others, getting to know others, and looking for opportunities to give value to others. And they're going to want to give value back to you. But again, I think we talked about this earlier, giving with no expectations is a big thing for me. So you do a favor for somebody, you're not expecting them to do anything back. You just know, call it karma or anything else, like it's going to come back at some point. And then one last thing, like you mentioned community building as well. The network is essential to building a community. A community is essentially a network of people who are bonded over a common interest, right? Whether it's a church group, a local community, I run a community for talent development professionals, a professional community, whatever it may be, even an organization, people are sort of bonded over a common interest of like the furthering the mission of the company, right? And I've seen studies that show that the more connections there are within an organization or for an individual employee, the longer they're likely to stay if they have meaningful connections. And so I think that community is the future as well. And people are lonelier than ever. We've got to build more community.
I'm super big on this. And I guess, it may have been about 10, 15 years ago. There's a book and a guy and a gentleman that I know that they used to work for Deloitte. His name is John Hagel. And he wrote a book called Pull, which I highly recommend. Now, I mentioned this book, but it's a very difficult book to describe. But it's a pretty incredible book because it really talks about how in today's world, we have the capacity to pull people towards us. And he talks about all these different ways in which technology, our sense of interaction really kind of supports that. And one aspect that he talks about is how important it is to create moments and opportunities to bring people together, because that's where the serendipity takes place. He says you always should be creating moments of serendipity, but also you should find ways in which you can pose questions, very interesting questions, to your community as a way of getting them engaged and being connected to a sense of how to solve things as a community. This book the impact of this book played a huge role in how I think of networks and community today. And so what I would add to what you're saying is that even if you're inside an organization, and some people do this well, but if you're inside an organization, it would benefit you that if you have an interest around something, let's say that you're inside of a company and you have an interest in design thinking, and you want to know how this practice can impact your organization or enterprise. Well, the things that you can do there is to start talking to people about design thinking and get an idea of what people's interest is and start building that community and then doing something together. And that's not only is that a way to bring value to the enterprise, but it's also a way that you could start building your own network of people that are like-minded, people who are interested in innovation. Because inside of organizations, for example, one of the biggest challenges a lot of times is that you have a lot of innovators and change agents that are isolated. Mm. And they're isolated to the point where some remain quiet, some don't do a great job in articulating their ideas and put themselves in positions of being shot down. But when you begin to kind of build a community inside of an enterprise, that's what John Hagel mean about pulling people towards you and having a sense of purpose. But that's something that we can do inside and outside the organization. We have our immediate friends who are our colleagues, doing dinners, doing meetups. These are all ways in which you can kind of cultivate this community. You're pulling people towards you.
Yeah, absolutely. I looked it up, that book, by the way, The Power of Pull by John Hagel, was published in December 2012. So it's just about 11 years old. You nailed it. And I haven't read that. I'm looking forward to checking it out because I'm all about that concept. And you know, you talk about people like pulling people, bringing people together, and those lunches and dinners and things like that. You know, you've seen it, right? The working world has changed a lot in the last 4 years as a result of the pandemic. It's where things were probably going anyway, but so many, now a lot of companies are bringing people back to the office, but so many companies are working remotely. So many people are working remotely, hybrid. And so I think that all those things still remain true, but a lot of times we need to be more proactive and more intentional about doing them because we're not in the same place. We're in a, you know, quote, distributed workforce. We've got to be like, hey, Ahmad, we haven't talked in a while. Like, let's get on Zoom or let's have a little Zoom happy hour or whatever. We got to bring people together. You've got to be proactive because you just don't have the walking down the hall, seeing somebody like, hey, what's up, man? What are you working on? Do you want to go to happy hour later? So we just got to be more intentional about building that network.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. And I think that once again, that's the reason why I love your book on your career, on your life, is because, you know, in today's future of work, people migrate to different jobs all the time. So you can't necessarily just count on these networks that you call, you know, your workplace colleagues. You can build up that network, but when you leave there, you want to make sure that you're also leaving with a network, that your network is portable.
Yeah.
And that's the way that you began to kind of build up, you know, some credibility around not only as yourself as a thought leader, but also having a group of people that you can crowdsource information and problems and challenges to solve, the way you want to learn about things. Actually, John Hagel, he talks about this concept called scalable learning, you know, and part of that idea around scalable learning is that as you build your community, how quickly you could solve problems or get the answer to something. And that's why it's so critical.
100%.
To kind of build up that community there.
Yeah. I mean, we could build the network on a long-term basis for like, oh, it might lead to job opportunities one day, but on a short-term basis, it's going to help me solve problems faster, right?
Absolutely.
Because you can sit and think all day and try to solve something yourself. But if you ask five friends, you're going to get some suggestions. It might not be the best answer, but chances are you're going to solve that challenge faster. And that's why I'm always trying to surround myself with other great entrepreneurs, thinkers, people who are doing great things.
Absolutely.
And I don't hesitate to reach out and say, oh, I just had this happen. What do you think? And I love helping other people. Just this morning, I woke up and I had a text from my friend Leanne in Australia, who we do similar things. And so we message each other all the time. And she was like, hey, I just got this request in my inbox on LinkedIn. What do you think? How would you respond? And I was like, oh, here's exactly what I would do. And I don't know if she's going to do that or not. I haven't heard back from her today, but she has, maybe she sent that to three friends and now she has different suggestions for how to solve that and how to go forward. That's how we help each other in a community.
Now, one of the areas that you also speak about, which is one of my favorite topics today, personal brand. So why is personal brand so important? And then what entails developing or building out a personal brand?
Yeah, this is another one that I think is going to become more and more important as time goes on, we get into the future of work, all that stuff, things keep changing faster, project-based work, gig economy, all that stuff. Everybody has a brand, just like companies have a brand. The brand has been the domain of companies for decades, but people have brands too. Your brand is essentially your reputation. It's what people think about you, what they say about you, even when you're not around. And we all have a brand, whether you do anything about it or not, because we're all making micro judgments about people like 100% of the time, all the time. Every time you interact with somebody, you're thinking in the back of your mind, like, oh, do I like working with this person? Would I want to hang out with this guy again? Would I not want to hang out with him again? Right? Every single time. And people are doing the same thing with you. I try not to think about it too much, but it's happening, right? And so people are forming a reputation, whether you do anything about it or not. And so I'm big on being more intentional about your personal brand. Doesn't mean being fake. I'm also a big advocate of authenticity. I think we should be able to show up and be who we are. However, we have to be mindful that however we're showing up can and will impact our brand and our reputation. And we impact that brand by how we show up, how we interact with other people at work, how hard we work, the projects we take on, how late we work, of course, how we treat other people, right? How we treat ourselves. And then the other way is online, right? How we interact with people on social media. LinkedIn is the big one for you know, the working world, but Instagram, Facebook, you name it. Are we posting stuff? Are we commenting? Are we supporting other people? Are we arguing and bringing people down? Side note, like political arguments never help your personal brand unless it's like that's the career you're trying to pursue, right?
Sure.
But these things are all impacting your brand. And so my big thing on it, and I, you know, have a whole chapter and I run courses on this and stuff, you know, I don't go too deep into it, but is to sit down and think about what you want your brand to stand for. Who's the type of person that, you know, who are you? That's a big question, but I would challenge, invite everybody to sit down, take out a piece of a notebook paper. I've done this a few times and just write, I am, and all the things that you are. So I am a husband, a father, I'm a speaker, an author. I'm an alumnus of the University of Florida. I'm a cancer survivor. I have worked in such and such place. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a podcaster. I'm a cyclist. Like these are all things that I identify with. And the list could keep going. There's so many things, right? And you might have, you could get in your hobbies, all this type of stuff. Think about who you are and then think about what you want to stand for. Like for me, it's like generosity, kindness, inspiration, motivation, being helpful. I've heard other people say they want to be identified with hardworking, being the person that can get things done, like save the project, integrity, whatever it is. And then once you have that list, you can ask yourself on a regular basis, am I showing up in alignment with the brand that I said I wanted to portray, right? So I said I want to be known as kind and generous and helpful. But if I'm really honest, I was kind of selfish jerk today at the office. I just like went in my cubicle, someone asked me for help and I said I was too busy and that was it. Is that really in alignment with the brand that I want to portray? Like, I don't think so. Maybe tomorrow I'll go back to them and be like, you know what? I'm so sorry. I had a rough day. Can I help you with that project? And see how it changes your brand and other people's perspectives. It makes a huge difference. The projects you get invited to, jobs down the line. When you interview for you go for a promotion, you interview for a job or go out for a project and the team has a discussion about whether they want to hire you or not, you're not going to be in the room to advocate for yourself, right? Those interviews are done. It's going to come down to your reputation. And if they know you well enough, it's not just about your skills. It's about what I want to work with this person. And that comes down to your brand.
No, I think that's, I mean, that's such great advice. What I would add to that, because I think, because you mentioned authenticity, I think one aspect is knowing that you can't be everything to everyone. And that doesn't mean you need to be a jerk, you know, to half of the other people that, you know, that may not sign off on who you are. However, it's important that, you know, building your brand and authentically is about understanding that you're not going to be for everyone. You know, so when you are in a room, people are going to have different perspectives of you based on your brand. But at the same time, there are going to be some people who see your style and your approach as something that would not or may not fit within their project. Some others are going to say, you know, he or she, they're perfect for this. They fit in exactly where we would need them for this. And so I think that aspects of authenticity and really kind of digging down on that, and something you mentioned earlier about self-awareness and doing things like meditating and becoming very mindful. These are all things that get to know what our authentic selves are.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I think it's something that's going to go with us for a long time, whether we change careers, stay in the same career, whatever it is, right? That brand is going to continue to help us or hurt us throughout our careers. So that's one that I'm just really big on. It's always going to help set us up for more success in the future, no matter what we want to do.
So Andy, this has been a great conversation. So glad we had a chance to do this. And, you know, we're talking about networking and connections. And so our connection, I'm feeling like we've developed a friendship. Once you have a beer and you get to meet the family.
That's right. Yeah. You came to my house, I got my wife and kids.
Absolutely.
You're in now.
I really appreciate. And I think you're doing a fantastic job with this, with your work around owning a career, because we are at this point where if you're not taking some sense of ownership, then the economy and enterprise, they get to kind of determine who they want you to be, when that does not necessarily need to be the case. Any closing points you would like to make about this topic? And also, if you can, speak about where we can find your book or find your community, because you do have a community called
the
Talent Development Think Tank.
That's right. The closing thought is that nobody cares more about your career than you do. You know, hopefully your parents love you and care about you, right? If you're lucky, you have a boss who really cares about you, but really nobody cares more about your career than you do. So you've got to be the one to own it. You just can't wait for other people to do stuff for you. It's great to work hard and hope for a reward, but it's better to get really intentional with what you're working on and what you're working toward. So I just highly encourage people to take ownership of their careers. If you work in talent development, think about how you can enable other people to take ownership of their careers. I work with a lot of organizations to speak and train and teach people how to own their careers. So if you're interested in working with me, you know, feel free to reach out. My email is andy@andystorch.com. I have, obviously, the book is on Amazon. I have free resources on my website, including the 5 steps to owning your career. If you go to andystorch.com/bonus. And then, as you mentioned, for people who work in talent development, I have a podcast and a community called the Talent Development Think Tank. The website for that is tdtt.us, but you can go to andystorch.com and like everything is there, career resources, talent development resources, even a cancer guide. We didn't even talk about that. Save that for another time. But andystorch.com is the place to be. I look forward to connecting with people and I appreciate you having me on, man.
Well, thank you, Andy. And wow, this has been fantastic. And I look forward to another conversation with you. I think this may be something we should do quarterly or something like that, because I think there's a lot of people out there who is looking for kind of real-time advice on how to own their career. It'd be fantastic 100%. If we can do something.
100%. Thanks, Ahmad. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.